Hosts Paul and Debris, experts in business, leadership, and lifestyle.
Skilling you softly to a successful you. Emotions are your value, and your value is your business. UK Health Radio.
We are in. Up and running, and yes, you are with Paul Rees on UK Health Radio. I am banging today, and what a show do I have in front of me. I'm whizzing all the way to Australia. Well, if you're in Australia, it doesn't matter, but hey, I'm not. I mean, you're in the little place of Wales, and I have a massive show in front of us. This lady is profound in how she's changing the subject matter of adoptee adoption and all the stuff that comes around that. But just getting that into that in a sec. Yes. So it's my second show back after a few weeks kind of hitting the road, as they say. I'm really back warming into, you know, what we do every week. And I want to thank all those that are sending on their messages, sending their comments. Keep them coming. Without you, what is the point? You know what I mean? Really. But today, my partner in crime, my wife, and all the things I tend to call her, regardless of how I emotionally feel, I do have her, is not with me today. In fact, she's having a lie-in because it's early morning here in Wales, but late in the evening in Australia or something like that. Who knows? Who cares? We are here and we are doing a bit with you guys. But you know what? Let's go into the show. Let's talk about where we are this week because it is a deep dive subject matter. Almost a subject that's kind of, I don't know, it's like a little taboo, it's hidden. People do talk about it, they know about it. And in some way, there's the whole persona of, oh, there's nice, that comes with this whole kind of emotion of when someone adopts or you're an adoptee. But what we don't take into account is the layering of I'm going to say, emotions that come with being an adoptee. Also, the emotions that come in adopting. You know, there's a two-way journey and somewhat very overlooked. You know, in some countries, it's been used as a tool in order to, create a hidden undercurrent of placing children into homes that was considered a safe, productive, let me say that, productive way of homing children. I mean, we've gone through world wars and we've gone through all kinds of disruption in life where children were passed around like confetti. They were, in order to what they considered, governments considered to be a safekeeping exercise. But with that safekeeping exercise, there's been a whole kind of overlooked understanding of the cause and effect emotionally on these, I'm going to say, generations now of adoptees that have, I'm going to say, suffered in the lack of understanding to their life, their past, their historic lives that have been kind of just erased through the process of adoption and so on and so on. And trust me, I'm not an expert on this. The person I have in front of my screen is an expert on this. And she is someone that's brought this whole new shape to the true understanding, the modern understanding, to the cause and effect of the emotional life of an adoptee is where we are here. And without further ado, let me bring in, and here's the thing, you know, I might not pronounce this name correctly, but too bad, sad, I have an accent. I'm going to bring in the beautiful, the wonderful. If you've seen this lady on my screen, she's absolutely stunning. She has this gem that hangs from her neck, the shape of her heart. It is absolutely beautiful. And everything else to match it is the wonderful, the amazing Karen Chaston.
Hello, Paul. And you said it correctly. Well done.
Karen, firstly, thank you for coming on the show. And you know what, listeners, you know, this is going to be a delicate operation of conversation. It truly is. Because in Australia, you know, adoption was something that was used, I'm going to say, as a conveyor belt of or a process in order to relocate without any consideration of the future thoughts, feelings, and the layering emotions that comes with being an adoptee. But this is a global thing also. But for yourself, Karen, do you feel this has been influenced by the past historic, I'm going to say, actions of what was used within Australia to what the government may have considered being a safe process to distributing, you know, children? Yeah.
Well, it wasn't just in Australia, the forced adoption era, or in America, it was called the baby scoop era. It ran from just after the Second World War, so from 46 to the early 80s. And it was the world that we all lived in at that time where, you know, you can't have an unmarried mother, and you especially cannot, if you're an unmarried mother, well, you certainly don't have any rights, or you're not capable of bringing up your own child, no matter what age you were. And they were forcibly taken all around the world and put in these homes of these parents who were married. Most of them were wealthy. Most of them were childless couples for whatever reason, who probably never, ever went into their own infertility wound. And they wanted a child and they were happy to pay for one. And the Catholic Church and all of the churches for that matter and the governments were more than happy to sell babies because that's basically.
It's almost
because it
like
was never framed as that, was it? Yeah. It was always framed as we are doing the right thing by these children by giving them to these couples because you're young. And to be quite honest, some of the mothers were not even young. They were widowed. And then they became pregnant again. And because they had other children to look after, their child was forcibly taken from them. There's
I mean,
so many.
This, historically, what sort of, what use was this? And so when we think about this historically, what era was this then? Do we feel that?
This was from 46 to the early 80s.
The early 80s. I mean, that's just around the corner in our past. Early 80s.
It was. Yeah, I mean, and there were closed adoptions, so you were never destined to see your child again. The records were closed, never to be unsealed. Though in Australia, the laws changed in 91. In America, some of them are still, in some states, it's still closed.
Wow.
They cannot find their biological parent or their biological child. But of course, with DNA now, they are getting past it.
We're going to go into, the whole emotional fingerprint that you've been working on. That is a big part of, I understand, your product and your process. But let's talk about, if I can, just touch back into that closed adoption. Because the overlook on that, and the oversight surely is, at some given point, you're going to have a craving as a human being to link back to, you know, your birth mom, because we don't lose that, we don't lose that emotional, I'm going to say, connection, because you've taken this to a whole new level that we'll just go into, and that would leave for me, you know, being that, you know, I'm effectively, you know, I have a stepdad who I call my dad. I'm not on the level of being an adoptee because I still got my mom. But just to a certain level, I can understand this, that, you know, you do have a craving to meet that biological mom, you know. Mine's dad, which is lighter again, but the mom is a whole different emotional connection, do you feel?
Oh, definitely. Like, let's look back, right? And this is what most people don't understand. So when we are in utero, we are physically, through the umbilical cord, connected to our mother, right? We are, from about 18, 19 weeks gestation, we are listening to her voice. We are hearing her heartbeat. We are moving with her. We understand her rhythm. We also are taking on her emotions, right? So, and when you think about it, all you got to do is look at it as a mother who's holding the attachment that child after being born is so connected to their mother. They know instantly their mother's voice. They just are naturally attached to their mother. And if she's not around for very long, they look for her. And there's actually limbic resonance. From the time we are born, this is a science fact, that from the time we are born, our limbic brain goes looking for our mother's limbic brain. And when we connect, when she's like near us, we go into safety. We feel safe. Now, when our mother is not around, as in all of these cases in the forced adoption era, the baby goes into instant abandonment, rejection, and they then go into hypervigilance. Where is my mother? I am not safe. And they stay in that state for a very long time, even though they may have another person as a caregiver who is looking after them. They know that it's not their mother they connected with in utero.
Carmen, let me
So
just.
we call this the emotional umbilical cord. So we are connected emotionally to our mother. Now, when a mother dies at birth, right, the child who lives will be comforted, it will be recognized, they'll be allowed to grieve, they will be spoken about it all the time. But in the case of adoption, no one ever sees that loss. They don't see adoption beginning with loss. In order for the child to go to their adoptive parents, it has to start with loss. But that is never recognized. And in the forced adoption era, what happened was the babies were considered to be blank slates, right? And they could be 6 weeks old. So they may have seen their mother in that time. They were certainly allowed to see their mother in that 6 weeks provocation period, but whether they actually did because of this forced adoption, they were telling mothers that they had no rights to their babies, they had given them up, they weren't allowed to see them. So the child is still connected to their mother, and when they go to their adoptive family, okay, there may be a caregiver who is looking after them and loves them and is doing everything physically for them, but they're not connected. They can't be connected. Because they don't smell right, they don't move right, they don't have the same voice, they aren't emotionally attached to this person.
Isn't
And
it
this was
crazy? Is
heart-wrenching.
isn't it crazy, Karen, that as humans we didn't consider the 9 months that you carried within that womb and the connection you already have. And I want to voice this out, and we're going to go back into this, listeners, the emotional umbilical cord. This is just such a profound three-worded sentence, I'm going to say. But I want to come back to yourself, Karen, because you also speak from personal experience.
Yes, I do.
And can we
So
share
in
some of that, please?
1973, when I was 16 and a half, I gave birth to my daughter under these circumstances. I had spent the 5 months previously in an unmarried mother's Catholic home. And of course, I was shamed. I was Catholic. How dare you have sex when you're not married? You've been brought up. How dare you shame your parents and think that this. And you know what? I was curious. That's all I was. I was curious. I needed to know what this sex was about. Yes, I was probably definitely too young, but as we all know, as teenagers, we all think we're so much older than what we actually are. And that's all that I did wrong. Right. And I'm pretty sure my daughter, it was either the first or second time that she decided to, well, I'm going to be born. So she hopped in. And of course, well, it was 9 and a half months later, she was born under these circumstances. Now, I had spent 5 months in an unmarried Catholic mother home. Every day I was shamed. Every day I was told, if you love your baby, you will give her to an unmarried. To a married couple, wealthy couple, I was told, which I think is probably BS, that they had to own their own home, as in no debt. in order to qualify to be one of these parents, and they could give my child everything that I could not. How was I going to look after my child? I was still in high school. How on earth could you possibly provide for your child when, and yes, my boyfriend did want to marry me, but who wants to get married at 16? Like,
You were brainwashed to give that child away.
brainwashed, coerced, not only by the nuns, but also the Catholic Church, by the social workers. We've seen so many documentary on social workers. They had one job, and their only job was to get those adoption papers signed, and they could use whatever methods they felt necessary as long as they came back with that signed. Now, here I am, 16 and a half. I signed the adoption papers. Now, what other legal document that is binding can a 16-year-old sign?
Wow,
None.
that is
None.
such a process of manipulation in many ways, also we'd like to
Oh,
say. But from
yes.
that, that experience also has given you first-hand understanding, because since yourself and your beautiful daughter are you reunited, you have been for some time, and you've rebuilt the mother and daughter relationship. And what did that feel like?
Oh,
And
my.
also you've gained the understanding of your daughter's own experience of being of what it feels like to be an adoptee.
Yes. Well, in 1991, Australia changed the adoption laws, and the records became open. So we could both register and put ourselves on a list, and if you both registered, well, they would connect you and help you. But and then a few years later, I put myself on the list. She didn't. She was around, so she was born in 73, and this was in 91, they changed those laws. So she was, 18, 19. And then a few years later, I found out that I could apply for her adoptive birth certificate and she could apply for her original birth certificate. And I always thought, well, it's not my place. Like, I've given away my rights, and how can I interfere in her life? And, I had hoped that everything had gone really well for her. But then a couple of things happened. One, in 95, my dad had a stroke, and I also read in a magazine that it's very rare for adoptees to contact their biological parents because they feel they've been rejected once and they don't want to be rejected again. And also, what had happened. So, the time I was 21, which was like in 1978. So from 1978, I would go at least once or twice a year to a clairvoyant, a medium, just to check in on her. Because as I grew up and started to realize what the world was like, I started to worry about her. I was worried about her, not only her mental and emotional health, but I was also worried that she may be sexually abused. Because I thought, well, if she's adopted and they've got a natural child, well, who will they go for first? So I was really worried about that. So I would go and I'd check in her, and they would always say, she's having a great life, everything's good, that's not happening, and she'll contact you when she's 21. So her 22nd birthday was fast approaching and she hadn't contacted me. So I thought, okay, I'm meant to do this because I've had all these signs. So I went to Sydney. I took all my documentation because I was living on the Gold Coast then, and everything happened in New South Wales, in Sydney, in Australia. So I went and got I filled in the forms, and 6 weeks later, I received her adoptive birth certificate, which had so much detail on it. I could literally get one of my sisters to look up the phone book. I had an address. I sent her a letter. And 5 years later, she responded to my letter.
Wow. 5 years later. I mean, it
Five
is
years later.
that's
I know.
incredible, and it's that's a fair chunk of time for her to consider, for sure. What we're going to do here, Karen, we're going to jump into our first commercial, and when we come back, listeners, we're going to then follow into what is this amazing, I'm going to say insight, enlightenment. Call it what we wish, but we're going to jump into this philosophy of the emotional umbilical cord and really deep dive to what it looks like. Okay, so we're going to be back in about 2 minutes, listeners, after this commercial, and be see you on the other side for sure.
UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
Optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list? Then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one super supplement brand, help you achieve that in the most convenient and comprehensive way possible. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health, sleep, emotional balance, and more. Benefit from the power, purity, and positivity of our award-winning powder sachets or our therapeutic capsule range. Use code RADIO15 at reviveactive.com and save 15% off today. Super supplements for a super you.
Cappuccino, latte, Americano, flat white, macchiato.
Just imagine, for less than the price of a single cup of coffee out on the high street, you could enjoy an award-winning online magazine every month with up-to-the-minute information on health and healthy lifestyle. Sounds like a good trade-off? Check out Health Triangle magazine on the UKHealthRadio.com website. Just sacrifice a single cup of coffee every month.
Let's all put health first.
The station that makes you feel good.
Happy days, yes, and welcome back with Paul Rees on UK Health Radio. And today we are blasting out with the wonderful, the amazing, the beautiful, the astounding Karen Chaston from Australia, who is the expert in, I'm going to say, adoptee with her philosophy, a profound philosophy from the emotional umbilical cord. Yes, I said that. We're going to dive into that. Now, I'm not sure really, Karen, I introduced that correctly because it's pretty deep. But tell me a little then, tell me a little about this new philosophy, this new understanding that you are really, I'm going to say, really intensifying its understanding to the world, which is the emotional umbilical cord.
That's part of it, but it's actually the emotional. Now I've forgotten my thought.
Yeah, we're okay, man. Listen, I forget, Lord.
It's the emotional fingerprint of an adoptee.
Wow.
That's what it is. That's what it all is. The emotional umbilical cord is actually one element of the emotional fingerprint of an adoptee. There are three other elements that make it, and that's what happens throughout their life and how it grows. So there are four elements to the emotional fingerprint of an adoptee, and the emotional umbilical cord is the first. The second is the limbic resonance and the absence of that. The third is the impact of the primal wound, which happens on separation. And the last is the wounded inner child. And because most people in these forced adoption eras were not aware about all of this, the wounded child got impacted constantly in their foundational years and still as they grow older and older because of society's lack of understanding that adoption begins with loss.
Wow.
They see it as a happy ever after. And when an adoptee starts to find their voice, which has been squashed most of their life, they are continually shut down. You should be grateful. Your adoptive parents did the best thing they should do. They spoiled you rotten, all of these things. But what they're missing is the fact that they have longed their whole life for their biological family, especially their mother.
Wow. And that, does that circle right back round then to effectively the emotional umbilical cord never severs?
That's correct. But we think it severs at the same time as the physical umbilical cord. That's what they all believed in that era. But the funny thing about it, Paul, is, you know, through the research that we've done, you know, it's not just lived experience for me and my daughter. It is also that in 1968, they were aware in America, they were doing research on the emotional and psychological trauma that being separated from your mother from a young age, most of the cases from birth, is traumatizing the child.
Wow.
And they were aware of it in 78, and I had my daughter in 73.
Let me read this out to you because, I mean, I have a ton of information that I've had from you, and I don't know I'm going to get it all out there because we've got so much going on here. But the emotional fingerprint of an adoptee is more than just a resource. It's a groundbreaking mission that redefines how we understand adoption and its lifelong impact. Now, this process you talk about, the four pillars, pivots, or whatever it is you call those guys.
Yeah.
So each one of those then will take the adoptee what? Through a realization, through a healing process? What does that look like for them?
Okay. So now I've just explained the four elements that creates the emotional fingerprint of the adoptee. Now what we have created, our resources, is we actually go through eight life stages.
Wow.
Starting from conception, so that they are conception to 6 weeks. Adoption to 6 years, the middle childhood years, the teenage years, adulthood, parenthood, reunion, and then beyond the and then create co-creating the loving bond between the biological parents or mother, whoever it is, the biological and the adoptee. And reunion, you know, we see all these shows where we see the happy reunion. That's just the start of it. It's the hard work that comes after it. Because even though you're biologically connected, you have been separated for however long. So it's not as though you automatically connect and they have had a different nurture to the way you would have nurtured them. So it is a very big disconnect.
So let me jump in there, Karen. So this resource that you have now designed and put together... again, the emotional fingerprint of an adoptee. So I would basically, come to your website and purchase this resource. How does that work?
Yes, that's it. It is. And our main resource is we've called it the eight essential lessons, where we dive into each of those life stages, those eight life stages, and we dive into eight themes in those eight essential lessons. Just to give people an understanding. And we also have workbooks designed for different people. So an adoptee will get one, a biological mum will get a different one, a father will get another one, adoptive parents will get another one. It's also designed for their extended circle, partners, friends, siblings, and of course, support workers, because it's an understanding that most people do not understand that adoptees are traumatized. A lot of psychiatrists, psychologists don't even have a question on their intake form, are you adopted?
Yeah.
Because if they need to understand that if you are adopted, your foundational years are based on loss and you have been silenced over your loss because no one sees it as a loss.
Wow, Karen,
these
are incredible insights. They truly are. So firstly, give me a call. What is your website? Where would I find this?
Yeah. TheChastenCentre.com.
TheChastenCentre.com. And there I would find all these resources. Yes. And as an adoptee, then I would basically watch videos. How does that present to me?
Yes. So we have your exclusive previews, which goes into the first five lessons. And you can have an understanding, and then on another page, which will then take you into the eight essential lessons, which have, oh my goodness, they are so many insights, so many resources. You're looking at so many hours of videos and the insights for each of those life stages, because most people don't understand what an adoptee goes through. And it's important, not only for adoptees, but biological parents, adoptive parents, for them to understand. Because if you're an adoptive parent and you don't have this basic understanding of your child, you will bring them up completely different, and you will make the wounded inner child expand.
Wow. Let me call that.
Your lack of understanding.
Let me call that address out again. So it's thechastencentre.com.
Correct.
And is there an email?
Yeah, Karen at thechastencenter.com.
Karen at thechastencenter.com. And all the social media links, listeners, will be going out with this show. So when you pick it up, you'll see all the social media. You can get hold of Karen and things. But I want to come back. So let's say I'm an adoptee, and then, what do you feel that, would this be a self-healing process for me? Do you feel it'd be something that would just give me a greater, deeper understanding to my emotional self as an adoptee?
Definitely. Healing has to begin with awareness and understanding. And because many adoptees live in the fog, which is they do not understand what they've been through, they are still, I guess sometimes you could actually call it Stockholm syndrome. They have attached themselves to their adoptive parents and they will say, there is nothing where I've had an amazing adoptive experience, I have nothing to fear. Then their adoptive parents may pass, and then they go, you know what? I would like to connect with my biological parents. But sometimes that's too late because they may have also passed. And it's about understanding that you have a right to know, to connect your biological self and your nurtured self, your nature and nurture. There is no reason why that cannot come together. And so many people, for some reason, seem to think that you should be grateful and you should never go searching. But that's like saying, well, I need to cut half of me off because I do have traits. I am different to my adoptive parents. You have to be. You can't have the same traits. You can't be the same person. It's like I like to explain it as you're a square or a triangle trying to fit into a square. And it just won't naturally fit. And another thing is, it's so basic. Like these children have been separated from their biological mother right from the start in many cases. We don't separate dogs until they're 9 weeks old. So why is it that we feel that on birth, and it's still happening today, especially in America, where as soon as the child is born, the adoptive parents just take the child away and it's meant to be an open adoption and it doesn't last to be open for very long. But we don't do it with animals, so why do we seem to think it's okay with humans?
Wow, that is a huge thought for sure. But Karen, you've also been through your own journey, and may I say, your CV, your life CV, is as long as my arm. For over 25 years, you built a successful career as a senior manager, CPA, CFO, holding a master's in accounting from Bond University. The list goes on. But here we go, 2013, just 15 months after your son Dan's passing. Let's touch on that, because you're also an expert in grief.
Yes, I am. And I wasn't before Dan passed, believe me. And I just did what most people do. I just got on with life. I avoided it. I increased my avoidant behaviors, food, alcohol, working too much, all of those things I went into for 15 months. And then I was made redundant from my much loved CFO role. And I really do feel that it was like the universe going, Karen, you didn't wake up after Dan passed. So we're throwing this at you. And if you don't wake up after that, I'm sure I would have had some sort of health issue because I certainly wasn't healthy in my CFO role. And so I stopped.
How old
And
was your son when, how old was your son, Karen, when he
he was
passed?
27. He was my
Wow.
youngest child by a minute. He was a twin, and he had an so he had a twin brother, and then Dan, that was Dan who passed. Josh is his twin brother. Dan's 2.5 years older than them, and then Kim is 8 years older. So Kim was 10 years. There's 10 years between Kim and the twins. So the four children. He was 27, and we
Wow.
unfortunately found him dead at our back door one Sunday morning.
That is an experience I have no doubt no parent would wish to,
No
experience in
one.
their life. And when we think
No.
about the level of that grief, because one, you found your son. And then secondly, you had to deal with that, plus then having to go through the grief.
Yeah. And I didn't go through the grief, Paul. I avoided it.
Oh,
which
wow.
is why when I stopped working, I looked in the mirror and I thought, I don't like anything about you. You're angry, you're overweight. I look 10 years older than what I am now. And I just looked so old. And I've got these two passport photos, my 07 and my 17 passport photos, and I look so much younger in my passport photo, my current one. And it's just so interesting that I needed to become my own best friend. And everyone needs to do this process. Everyone needs to become their own best friend. And it wasn't easy because I was so into my beliefs. And as we have discussed many times, the lie in the middle of that word beliefs and believe is so true. And it took me a while, but and then I became a life coach, and then I moved into grief and loss. So I became an expert in that. And then that was my natural progression with my daughter because we connected in 2001, and for 17 years we had a tumultuous reunion. It was not good in any way. And then after both of us starting to do work on ourselves, that's when we came together and said, we've got to stop hurting each other. We love each other. We've always wanted each other in our lives. So let's make it happen. And then went through creating that loving mother-daughter relationship is when I sat down and I thought, I need to understand what happened to you. And that's when I dived into and then created the emotional fingerprint of an adoptee, because the way she, her behaviors and her responses were not what I had seen in any other person. So I knew it was the what happened to you. And it's not, what's wrong with you. It's always what happened to you. And it always comes back to those foundational years.
Could we say, Karen, that adoptees are always struggling with, could we say, separation grief?
Separation grief. Identity and belonging, they have very low, they become people pleasers, they become chameleons,
Oh, wow.
and they can read a room very well because they will sit back and then they will look at people. They understand, they make great psychiatrists and psychologists because they have sat and studied people because they need to decide who they will be in this moment. And it's all about fitting in. So they're not rejected and abandoned again.
Wow.
Because they have this constant need to be loved. And if your own mother doesn't want you, how could anyone want you?
What I'm seeing here, Karen, is that, the emotional fingerprint of an adoptee actually breaks negative patterns that adoptees are secretly living. This is what I'm realizing this just from this conversation. This is profound. The level of not just healing, but the level of, I'm going to say, generational change that this process as you've built can offer adoptees is profound in its emotional richness. Is what that's how it feels to me. And very much has been overlooked.
It has been overlooked because everyone is so focused on the happy ever after of the adoption rhetoric.
Wow.
And they are forgetting the fact that adoption begins with loss. So if you're an adoptee and whatever age they are, they firmly believe that their mother did not want them,
Yeah.
right? And as an adult, they can go back and they can see the practices of the forced adoption era. They can hear the apologies. In Australia, every state has done an apology, and the federal government has done an apology for the disgusting forced the practices of the forced adoption era
Yeah.
on not only on the mothers but on their fathers and on the children and what it has caused. But as a child, they've still got their wounded inner child who keeps saying, your own mother didn't want you.
Wow. Let me stop you
Why
there.
would
So
anyone want you?
Wow, that's huge. I'm going to stop you there because I'm going to have a second commercial, listeners, and we'll be back in about 2 minutes. And then we're going to deep dive back into this whole life-changing process at the wonderful Karen Chasten at the Karen Chase at the ChastenCenter.com has evolved. So let me just get into this commercial so we can dive back in 2 minutes.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
If you see the letters AIDA, do you immediately think of the opera by Verdi? AIDA is also an advertising acronym for those iconic Mad Men days. A is for attention, I is for interest, D is for desire, A is for action. This process is a timeless truism for making a sale. Fortunately, if your product or service is health-related, we can offer you guaranteed access to a global audience with a high interest in health, healthy lifestyle and contemporary well-being. UKHealthRadio.com has a regular monthly audience of around 1.5 million health-conscious people. And Health Triangle, its award-winning monthly magazine, has around 20,000 paying subscribers. Find out more about both at UKHealthRadio.com. Let's all put health first.
Hey, are you tired of the irritation you get down there from pads and other bladder weakness products? Tena Sensitive Care Pads are the first ever bladder weakness pads enriched with a skin comfort formula. The skin-friendly layer in combination with the soft, 100% breathable materials helps protect intimate skin from irritation. And as always, you have triple protection from leaks, odor, and moisture. Gynecologist tested and dermatologically approved by the Skin Health Alliance. Look for Tena Sensitive Care Pads with a skin comfort formula online and in stores now.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Happy days and welcome back. Yes, you with myself, Paul Rees on UK Health Radio. And don't forget to join in with the other presenters on the other shows. There's tons going on here. But today, listen, if you just join us, go back to the beginning. There are so many golden nuggets in this opportunity for sure. This show is just amazing because we have the wonderful, the beautiful, the amazing, the fantastic Karen Chasten from Australia, who is the founder alongside, I'm going to say, a beautiful daughter, Lynn, the founder of course, the emotional fingerprint of an adoptee.
We co-created it.
Co-created, as they say, being political.
Co-created it. Because,
co-created.
You know, but how can I create the emotional fingerprint of an adoptee when I'm a biological mother? So her input, oh, my God, has been so invalid.
Let's have your website again. Throw the website out. What is it?
ChastenCenter.com.
ThechastenCenter.com. And of course, it's Karen at ThechastenCenter.com. Now, hold of lovely Karen, because her and her team are there and are ready for any kind of advice that you're looking for, any information. But you want to learn more about the emotional fingerprint of an adoptee, then go to thechastencenter.com. Go there, because trust me, if you are an adoptee, you're going to really dive into an opportunity of realization and insights. And these are emotionally life. It's a life-changing process, Karen. Would you agree?
Oh, definitely. You know, adoptees have been shut down, silenced for way too long. Mm-hmm. And what we do is we give them insights, not only into themselves, but into everything that has happened. And it just assists them to find their voice, to know that they're worthy, you know. Not only was it framed to me that if you love your child, you will give them up for adoption, but my daughter was told her life, you know, her whole life, once she found out she was adopted, your mother loved you so much, she gave you up. Like, that just gives adoptees a distorted understanding of love, and that goes out into all areas of their life, especially when it comes to themselves. Mm-hmm. And we all need to be able to love ourselves, not from a vanity point of view, but in order to become our true selves, we need to be able to love who we are and know where we're worth.
That's so deep, Karen, what you just said there, which was your mom loved you, that's why she gave you away. I mean, that statement, that cause and effect on that child into adult and experiencing love for themselves personally is very warped then.
Yeah.
If you love me, you'll leave me. If you love me, you're not like me. I mean, that's just a sign up for a very poor marriage.
It is. It's like, yeah. So they're like, well, I have to make sure they love me and I need to do everything to make sure they love me. Otherwise, they'll abandon and reject me. And imagine living your life with, and a lot of it is unconscious because it's been ingrained from such a young age. It's an imprint that has happened from such a young age. A lot of them don't even realize that these programs are running. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's what the emotional fingerprint of an adoptee is so valid. It gives so many insights into each of those eight life stages as to how this was formed and how you can unwind it and become the most amazing person that you are.
Wow. And this, of course, again, listeners, thechastencenter.com. Go there because you will find all these resources and Karen and her team ready.
And the beautiful Kimberly, my daughter.
Yes, let's
do look a little bit alike. There is a bit of mini me happening there, like quite a lot.
Yeah, let's get the beautiful Kim in there. Yeah, absolutely. And it is, it's been a mom and daughter, huge team effort. And just quickly thinking about that. How realizing was that then, going through this process, did you really learn a lot about each other?
Oh, definitely. And it helped because it was like, oh, that's why you do that. But we learned so much about each other, which is why we then said we need to go that next step further and create something else, for the world, because we worked such a tumultuous journey for over 17 years and we've been in reunion now 24 years. So for a long time, we couldn't even sit together for 10 minutes without ending up fighting and walking away in tears. And now, we're in each other's homes all the time and we're creating, co-creating this together. So we spend a lot of time together. Not only just on building the resource, but also on building our relationship. And as we know, relationships are always a work in progress. There's always something else to rediscover about to learn about each other. So it's been really good for us. And that's why we knew that we had walked this path for a reason.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just for us. It was to help people to understand that, the forced adoption era, people are aging, the adoptees are aging, their biological parents are aging, and it flows through into your children. You will parent differently. You will do all these things because you were brought up not mirroring anyone, and now you have a child who mirrors you, and a lot of the time your child, when they're born, is the first person you've ever looked like, which is just so wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're in your 20s or 30s and you've just found someone who looks like you. But you're going to parent differently because you've never had a biological roadmap on how to parent because you had misattunement just from the fact that you didn't have the nature connection.
Wow. How important do you think, Karen, it is for an adoptee to go through the process of the emotional fingerprint of an adoptee?
It's so important. It's just the awareness and the insights, because when you have this in-depth, and there are books out there on adoption and all that, but it's not the in-depth that we go into. Yeah. With these eight themes in these eight life stages, the depth that we go into, it helps you to see them from all these different angles. So then you get to look at it and you go, oh, wow. And then you will remember things that happened to you at that age and that life stage. And what it actually has done with Kim is whatever life stage we've been working on, it takes her back into it emotionally. So it's a healing process. I'm not going to say it's easy because it's never easy, but you've got to be able to bring it into the light to heal it. and it can't stay in what we call your swamp of BS thoughts, mm-hmm. because that's not going to help it to come out into the light so you can heal it. Wow. And if you ruminate in those BS thoughts for the rest of your life, we don't recommend it.
Well, there it is. I mean, unfortunately, we've run out of time. I wish we could go much further, but Johan will give me a row for running over. This has been fantastic, Karen Chasten, thechastencentre.com. That's what it is. Karen, thank you ever so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate your mind and above all your heart. Happy days and thank you, love.
Thank you. Great to see you again, Paul.
Happy days. Until this time next week, listeners, we're going to say boom. Bye for now. Emotion.